The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Jenna Ellis Show, sponsored by Legacy Precious Metals. There has never been a better time to invest in precious metals. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
As a constitutional law attorney, former senior legal advisor and personal counsel to President Donald J. Trump, Jenna Ellis believes in the rule of law and the importance of integrity in our elections. And she's ready to tackle the big cultural and legal issues facing America. This is the Jenna Ellis Show. Here is your host, Jenna Ellis.
Hi, friends, and welcome to another episode of the Jenna Ellis Show. I'm Jenna Ellis, and today I am so excited to have my good friend David Pivtorak, who is an attorney, and he's doing some great work filing a lawsuit that you absolutely need to hear about against American Express. It's become a class action, and he's going to be talking about what that all entails to push back against wokeness, and this is overt discrimination by a company and a corporation. So stick around for that interview coming right up. But before that, I also wanted to address, of course, you know, I trend on Twitter quite a bit, as any of you who follow me on Twitter know. And yesterday, I was actually a little surprised at this one because, you know, there are always these troll accounts from the Democrats and, you know, their operatives that will take clips and different things. And of course, will, you know, post them as if like either this is a bad take or this is a, you know, something we're making fun of or, you know, whatever. But this one in particular, I was actually surprised because I went on Newsmax yesterday, where, of course, I'm a contributor. And we talked about the upcoming testimony of Jenny Thomas before the January 6th committee. And of course, Jenny Thomas is married to Justice Clarence Thomas. And, you know, all of the issues surrounding her testimony and all of those things kind of aside, the only comment I'll make on that is that the January 6th committee, like, yeah, have you even thought about them in a while? Probably not. I mean, Liz Cheney has lost her seat now. The whole thing is a total embarrassment. There's now two major publishers that are saying that they're going to publish a volume and a companion kind of excerpt of the transcript of the testimony and their final report and everything. I mean, this will go probably just, you know, be as much of a bestseller as, you know, the latest in, you know, kind of teenage murder mystery drama. So I don't anticipate that that'll be huge, but, you know, but that's not unprecedented. Of course, the Mueller report was highlighted. And, you know, I remember this huge setup in the Barnes & Noble in New York when I was there for Fox. And, you know, you walk in and you see the table of, you know, the read the Mueller report for yourself. And it's like three volumes. And you're like, yeah, sure. I really don't care. But anyway, so that's all losing steam. But Jenny Thomas apparently has agreed to sit before the committee because, surprise, surprise, she is actually a political activist herself. And so, of course, the Democrats are condemning her for this, but they're not just condemning her for being concerned about election integrity. They're actually suggesting that Justice Clarence Thomas should recuse himself from all cases dealing with election integrity. They suggested that he should have recused himself from the Texas versus Pennsylvania case, which, by the way, the Supreme Court did not even take up. But they also suggest that Clarence Thomas is, you know, is thoroughly now corrupted from sitting on the bench because, you know, his wife is engaged in politics. Oh, no. Well, beyond the hysteria, of course, of the mainstream media and the Democrats, we actually have to look at what the law says. And of course, four judges, including Supreme Court justices, there's what's called a canon of judicial ethics. And this applies specifically and only to judges. And for all of the lawyers out there, if you're like me and you went through the professional responsibility, the MPRE exam, where it's a specific part of the bar exam that not a lot of people talk about, But you have to go through the model rules of professional responsibility. And part of that, and the reason actually why a lot of people fail it their first time around, is because they study all of the rules that govern lawyers, but they don't study the secondary subset of rules that govern judges specifically. So judges, being part of the judicial branch, should not be and are not allowed to be overtly political. And of course, that makes sense, because if you know that, you know, your local county judge or a federal judge or, you know, any of these justices on the Supreme Court, if you know their political persuasion and they have, you know, political signs out in their yard, well, then that tends to lead to an appearance of bias. And now, of course, they have all of their rights intact. They can vote, those sorts of things. But they are prohibited from certain other kinds of overt political activity. But those types of prohibitions and that particular canon of the Judicial Ethics Code does not apply to spouses. Now, you know, why is that? Well, obviously, if your spouse is a judge, that doesn't govern your own political activity, because you're two separate people. And it's the same thing, a little bit different, but we can analogize to a judge having a spouse that is still a practicing attorney. And so, you know, in some instances, if the practicing attorney then has a case, of course, they can't go in front of that particular judge. The judge would have to recuse themselves on that particular case. But otherwise, you know, in the same jurisdiction, you can still have the spouse of a judge that's practicing. It doesn't have any impact or bearing on their own career. And so, you know, but of course, the left is making this such a big moment of hysteria. And their goal, of course, is to simply not only harass and intimidate all of the conservative justices, particularly Clarence Thomas, because he has stepped into the shoes of Justice Scalia, and I think has been even more conservative and more brilliant in the last couple of years, even than his former colleague. And this, he's the left's number one target. And so now that the January 6th committee has kind of, you know, made up in their own mind, you know, whatever they think is wrong with Ginni Thomas. And, you know, I don't even know all of the specific allegations that, you know, why they want her to sit down. Apparently there are text messages, you know, whatever. I don't think anybody cares. But the point is, the only reason that they're specifically harassing her in particular in the media is because she has a husband that they absolutely hate. So they're actually doing the reverse of this, of what the law says, what the Judicial Code of Ethics says, and what all of the advisory opinions on the matter actually say, which is that you look at the judge's actions, the spouse is not bound by that. But now they're looking at the spouse's actions, and they're trying to bind the judge on that, right? So this is always what the left does, is that they invert things, and they completely pervert and manipulate the law to their own advantage, and they try to then malign the character, reputation, and credibility of lawyers like me, who give analysis in the media and say, well, wait a minute, what they're suggesting actually isn't true. And here's the facts, here's what the law says, and give opinion and analysis in the other direction. They, of course, hate that because it makes them look stupid, right? But interestingly, for the mainstream media leftists who are trying to, you know, slam me for actually raising this point, I actually said on Newsmax yesterday that this question surrounding Ginni Thomas was actually addressed in particular and precisely to Ginni Thomas over a decade ago, back in 2010, when she launched a nonprofit organization called Liberty Central. And that announcement, of course, even back in 2010, prompted a firestorm of media coverage. And, you know, numerous news outlets ran stories saying, you know, oh, there's a ton of ethical issues here. And one of these law review pieces is actually by Marquette University Law School faculty blog. And I found this to be actually really helpful if you, you know, ever want to just, you know, send a quick link to your friends who might be going, oh no, or they might be buying into this Democrat hysteria. Send them this little piece. It's titled, When a Justice's Spouse Engages in Political Activity. So this particular piece says that the stories then in 2010 focused on two particular questions. To what extent may the spouses of Supreme Court justices engage in political activity? And when may Justice Thomas's recusal be necessary if a donor to Liberty Central comes before the court? So notice that these two questions that they're raising focus on Justice Thomas's recusal being necessary in a very limited fashion. It's not, oh, your spouse engages in political activity, so you're done, period. You can never hear another case in front of the bar. You're totally done. No, it's only confined to when you would have an actual conflict of interest or an appearance of bias in a particular case in front of it with a particular litigant in front of the court. So of course we can see that the Democrats are making this way too overbroad. So this article goes on to say that legal ethics experts quoted in the news stories offered brief answers on both counts. And, you know, because maybe the rhetoric was tamping down just a little bit back in 2010, some of these legal experts weren't just so out to get Trump that they were willing to sacrifice their own credibility and reputation just to try to manipulate the law and their opinion and analysis just tailored to whatever they think is the worst possible outcome for Trump. But in the short answers to these, this author says that the first conclusion was very straightforward. The relevant codes of judicial conduct are limited by their text to judges. They have no power over spouses, right? That's what I've just been saying. And then goes on to say, moreover, numerous advisory opinions confirm the right of judicial spouses to engage in politics. However, a judge must clearly separate himself from the political activity of his spouse. Judicial recusal is governed by a federal statute. So going through the statute and the advisory opinions and the precedents concerning it, the relevant standard and proposal of a framework for evaluating cases that may arise in the circumstances concludes that Jenny Thomas can fully pursue her new organization's mission without compromising Justice Thomas's role on the bench. Right. And I agree, obviously, with this article. It's a very straightforward analysis. I have no idea if this is a Democrat or a Republican or a, you know, any supporter, left, right, whatever, who wrote this, but it's a very straightforward, genuine legal analysis about political activity of spouses. And so it actually made me laugh that probably for, you know, eight to 10 hours yesterday, I was trending on Twitter because one of the liberal kind of very, you know, frustrated, crusty bots, actually a real guy, but kind of, you know, an idiot. I use bot as a pejorative, posted this clip and made it sound like somehow, you know, oh, this is the totally wrong analysis. And I was just laughing because this is how genuine misinformation works, is when people don't actually look at, okay, what is the rule? And then let's look at the set of circumstances and the facts here, and then we apply the rule to this specific set of facts. That's what lawyering is, right? And of course, if you have a client, then you will look for colorable legal theories that that best suit your client's interest. Of course, that's our obligation of zealous advocacy. But if you are looking just generically and especially for judicial opinions of the court, you shouldn't have a bias either way. You should be concerned always about what the law says, the correct application and interpretation. And then, of course, not just that instance, but what's called the ex ante in the law or the precedent that it would set. And obviously here, you know, if we're setting this precedent or if these Democrats are wanting to set the precedent, that there can't be anyone who is a spouse of a judge that can engage in political activity, they would actually be inferring that some of their own people then are guilty of that. But they never go that far. What they want, of course, is a specific and different set of rules to govern just Trump supporters than they do the rest of the population, the rest of judges, the rest of attorneys, the rest of anyone in any profession. They want only a specific set of rules. I mean, look at the January 6th prisoners who are being held without bail. They're being denied their due process, protected rights under the Constitution, specifically the Eighth Amendment, Fifth and Sixth Amendment issues there. And yet the ACLU, supposedly the champion of the rights of the downtrodden against the overreaching big arm of government, they're totally silent on this. Why? Only because these people were Trump supporters. And so the overarching problem is that they want a different set of rules to apply to Trump supporters versus them, and especially the people that are aligned with their interests and their narrative. And so coming up, I'm going to also talk to David Piftorek, who interestingly, his case and the discussion is going to actually butterfly into this very well, because he's pursuing a corporation that is engaged in this exact kind of activity where they want to have a different set of rules for one specific demographic that they actually want to elevate over another set of individuals. And so this is what Democrats do all the time. And this is why, you know, this whole ESG nonsense that James Lindsay and others always talk about that's governing woke corporations, they want to segregate people. And if you're a Trump supporter, then, you know, you get an FBI raid, you get an FBI raid. But if you are a, you know, if you are an owner of a black business, well, then you're elevated. And guess what? You get a lower income rate than the exact same circumstances and a similarly situated person who happens to be white or Asian, right? Or, you know, any other skin color or race besides African-American. So all of this goes back into this fundamental problem that the Democrats don't want the justice system to be blind and unbiased and have genuine equal protection under the law for everyone. They want to pick winners and losers. They want to pick the rules that apply in various situations and have situational justice. That's really, you know, that's the title of this episode, situational justice.
To give you good
so we're going to talk more with my friend David Piftorek about his case. The Biden administration has really caused important. A financial crisis. So he, and they his have interview will no be talking with him coming up
oil
right after
Oil prices
this.
Have skyrocketed. And when oil prices go up, not only do your expenses go up, but the cost of transportation and shipping spikes, leading the prices of goods to rise. And we are already seeing record inflation. That's the last thing that we need. Our economy is in trouble, and you need to take steps to protect yourself. If all your money is tied up in stocks, bonds, and traditional markets, you may be vulnerable. So gold is one of the very best ways to protect your retirement. No matter what happens, you own your own gold. It's real, it's physical, and it's always been valuable since the dawn of time. Call Legacy Precious Metals today at 866-528-1903 or visit them online at legacypminvestments.com. That's legacypminvestments.com, where you can download the free investor's guide with the president of Legacy Precious Metals, who is discussing why you need to start your retirement account even if you're in your 20s or 30s. There is always a great time to protect your retirement and invest, just like you want to protect your health over the long term. So go to Legacy Precious Metals at legacypminvestments.com or call 866-528-1903.
And turning now to a story that I have wanted to cover actually for several weeks. This is a lawsuit that was filed against Amex that alleges that American Express implemented, quote, an anti-racism policy throughout its corporate structure and in the wake of George Floyd's death and all of the, you know, BLM matters and all of these companies and corporations that are trying to emphasize all of the woke culture, that Amex gave preferential treatment to individuals for being black and unambiguously signaled to white employees that their race was an impediment to getting ahead in the company. So this is now turned into a class action. And joining me now is the man himself who is fighting against this woke corporation, David Piftorek. And so, David, thanks so much for joining me.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Jenna.
Yeah. And, you know, I love it when lawyers are on the good side of going against these types of activities that are, just seem to be clearly on face discriminatory. So talk a little bit more about the lawsuit and where we're at in this stage of the proceedings.
Yeah. So we just filed a lawsuit recently. It's a nationwide class action against American Express. Just recently, about a week ago, we filed an amended complaint. We added three more named class representatives, so three more plaintiffs who had basically identical allegations as the original plaintiff. And these people are from all over the country. And, you know, they call up and they describe their situation, and it's literally the exact same thing that's already in the complaint. It's the exact same thing that the original named plaintiff, Brian Netzel, went through. In fact, one of the managers that we make allegations against in the original complaint, she managed to mistreat and fail to promote a white employee who was in a completely different city. And that's one of our new named plaintiffs. So that's where we're at. We're waiting for Amex to file their reply. So that should be happening fairly shortly.
Okay. And is this, because it looks like you're in California. Was this filed in California, or where is this out of?
This is actually filed in federal court in Arizona. So in the District of Arizona in Phoenix.
Oh, great. Well, that's way better than California and the Ninth Circus. So that's good. But it seems to me to be a parallel between all of the discrimination lawsuits, you know, back in like the 60s and 70s, where women were complaining about the same thing, and why, you know, we had the 1964 act originally for civil rights that named sex as a protected class, just to make sure that we didn't have these types of discrimination against people on any immutable characteristic. And now we kind of have this weird societal effect that it's like they want to believe that discrimination on the basis of the color of your skin, and that happens to be white now in this instance, is actually okay as some sort of, you know, maybe reparations or some sort of just outright hatred for white people. But I mean, it's, what are you seeing in terms of the phenomenon in the culture that has given rise to this type of outrageous and patently illegal action by such a large corporation? I mean, they have to know that what they're doing is illegal.
Oh, man. How much time do we have?
This is why it's a podcast. This is why it's great. It's not just 5 minutes on Tucker.
This is where we can really get into it. So, you know, it's funny. I was, you know, as I was sitting here waiting to come on, I was just thinking about this case, and the allegations here and the things that we're seeing in the culture and in what these major corporations are doing. I've never seen anything like it, how blatant and how just how completely they can disregard, you know, existing law and everything else, just how brazen they are about their policies, how explicit they are. I've been practicing for well over a decade. I've never seen facts like this. And, you know, as I was sitting here kind of thinking about it, I haven't seen stuff like this other than in case law that I've read from decades ago, right? From like right when the Civil Rights Act was passed. That's how bad this stuff is. Corporations have not been this brazen and explicit about discriminating based on skin color and race, basically, you know, since the 60s and 70s. And, you know, obviously before that, before the passage of the civil rights laws, but since they've been passed, we really haven't seen this type of explicit discrimination in decades. And one of the reasons I think this is going on is because, you know, frankly, a lot of these Fortune 500 companies, they got pretty comfortable with the idea that people who are, you know, generally right-leaning are going to support them no matter what they do. And so because they took this support for granted politically, they started pandering to the extreme left, which has captured many of our institutions, you know, socially, academically, and they thought that, you know, no matter what, people on the right would support them. And what we're seeing right now, both culturally and politically, is a huge shift, right? These giant corporations, you know, big tech, big finance, and everything else in between, right now, they're kind of enemies of the right. we're seeing a huge shift in the political dynamic in the country. And I think it's because a lot of these big institutions, they cynically thought that, you know, they can basically disregard an entire portion of the population and pander to the extreme left. So that's kind of my theory on what's happening, but it's, you know,
yeah,
probably
and
beyond my pay grade.
No, but it, you know, it's, you're doing such important work, and you raise a really excellent point, David, that, you know, this is the type of stuff that we studied in law school that seemed so antiquated, in the sense that, you know, and I've been practicing a little over a decade as well. And, you know, I remember in law school having these types of cases, you know, looking at something like, you know, Loving versus Virginia, like, you know, oh, we're not going to let, you know, a black person and a white person marry, or, you know, some of these things that and these overt discrimination based on, you know, employment, all of these things that seemed like, what type of a society would have thought that that was OK, that we needed to have a lawsuit to push us in the correct direction of morality. But I think you raise a great observation as well, that it's almost like there's this standard, rather than discrimination against white people, it's almost like the American Express type of corporations are saying, let's just elevate black people to a more protected class or a higher status. And even though that's now, you know, discrimination, they don't look at it that way. They look at it like, oh, we're just preferring and we're treating this set of people based on whatever characteristic as better and more worthy of certain advantages in culture. And that is so wrong thinking. And it is actually discrimination, but it's almost like they're convincing themselves that they're do-gooders in society. So what do you anticipate as you're waiting for the response from Amex? What can possibly be their justification and cultural narrative?
Yeah. Well, have you ever read Animal Farm, Jenna?
Yes, actually.
So, you know, what you mentioned, that's basically what's happening, right? Is every animal is equal, but some are more equal than others.
Yep.
And that's, you know, that really is the justification here that they've implemented into these policies. I think it's, the problem is this diversity, equity, inclusion apparatus that is echoing a lot of what we've seen in basic Marxism and communism, right? It's amazing on paper. The concept looks great. Like, hey, let's redistribute everything equally. But as we see in practice, this is what happens, right? We make everyone equal, but some are more equal than others. And I think they're going to have a very hard time making that justification, because, you know, as the great late Justice Scalia once said, discrimination is never benign. And what they're justifying here is what they would call benign discrimination, right? We're doing it for the public good. We're doing it for equity, or whatever reason they're giving for this stuff. And the fact of the matter is, whenever you start dividing people by identity and giving people special treatment, it always devolves into some of the most horrific things that humanity has ever seen. And as someone who's born in the Soviet Union, Soviet Ukraine, my family has seen it firsthand. And that's the lesson I'm trying to impart on people when I bring these lawsuits, and, you know, when I come on shows like yours to educate people about what this means in reality rather than on paper.
Yeah. And there is such a difference between the cultural narrative that these woke companies are trying to project with, they really do think that they're the do-gooders and they're creating this type of utopian Marxist society with, you know, all of their ESG types of involvement into their corporate apparatus. And yet
What they're actually doing is going against decades and decades of jurisprudence that we've had in an American system and a model that has truly created a more perfect union through our judicial branch. And this is why I'm so thankful that we have a separation of powers in America in the way that we do, because if we only were talking in the court of public opinion or in politics or this kind of clash of cultural narratives, then we wouldn't ever have a venue or a forum to have genuine equality and genuine lack of discrimination and sufficient process here. And so I'm really grateful for the late greats like Justice Scalia and hopefully still a majority of the current Supreme Court that understand these principles rather than just being kind of these cultural warriors for this Marxist utopia and socialism that they're really trying to create. And, you know, your other point is so well stated as well, that they're trying on purpose to divide people under this guise of good for society, but really they're arbitrarily making different classes of people. And this is why, you know, on the show, we talk a lot about the Christian worldview and the biblical analysis and the Christian worldview and genuine equality that our founders recognized at the formation of our country, saying that our rights are given by God, our creator. That is the only way that we ever achieve genuine equality, is to recognize that all of us are human beings made in the image of God. And our jurisprudence used to at least originally reflect that. And I hope that we're swinging back a little bit, you know, toward that. But are there any other companies that, you know, you're looking at, or you had mentioned before the show that your law office now has just fielded hundreds of calls from people now that you've opened this up as a class action? Is there anything else going on, you know, separate and apart from Amex that listeners should be aware of?
Yeah, there are stories every day. I literally can't keep up because I, you know, turn on the news or I go on Twitter, which is a great news source for us nowadays, or, you know, any of the news websites. Literally every day there's something else. There's some big company, there's some college, either private or public university. There's some public school somewhere out in the country, especially in the big cities, doing egregious things that just viscerally make you sick as to how blatantly they violate just this basic concept of equality. So you may have seen recently, there's a tech company in San Francisco, Twilio, who just did a massive round of layoffs, and the CEO, like, he even admitted, I haven't seen before. I gotta say, he publicly went out there and made a statement that they were doing the layoffs on from an anti-racist perspective.
Anti-racist? And, so how exactly do they define that?
Well, you know, basically the Kendian version, right?
Right.
The remedy for past discrimination is present discrimination, and the remedy for present discrimination is future discrimination. So, you know, that's the definition of anti-racism. And Chris Rufo, actually, he made a tweet that I'm thankful for. He went viral, and he basically said, hey, you know, if you were part of these anti-racist firings, then give David a call.
Awesome.
And he tagged me in it. So that's something we're working on. And obviously all the ones you've seen in the news, you know, I think you've seen the Pfizer, they're doing the grants based on race. I think Bank of America was doing, they started giving out home loans, right? Interest.
Yes.
Home loans,
yes.
Based on your race. So
race, which is incredible that somehow a family just based on your skin color, that would be either worthy or not worthy of a different interest rate. I mean, there's no logical connection other than wokeness.
How? Yeah. I mean, this is crazy, right? I'm not the only one.
Yeah, no, it's not anyone logical, but I'm so glad, David, that you're speaking out about this, and also that you are taking legal action about this to stand up for the genuine justice system and to fight back against this so that we don't lose all of these
jurisprudential outcomes and all these precedents that we've had over the years, because a lot of people, I think, are so concerned about being called racists or, you know, some of these other terms that are and being so vilified on Twitter and in the media, that I think a lot of people actually do look at this and they do see it, but they're hesitant to speak up because they don't want the backlash. And for corporations, you know, if their metric now is this implementation of ESG, then it makes sense why they're making some of these business decisions that they probably wouldn't otherwise. I don't think it's really helping their bottom line by any means. But I mean, you look at the Walt Disney Company, you know, who's trying to cater to, you know, a maybe 3% and completely disregarding their historic average consumer, which is, of course, the traditional family and, you know, two parents with kids who come there. And yet they are trying so hard to achieve this status in the court of public opinion that they're forgetting about the rest. So it's voices like yours and actions like yours and, you know, Chris Rufo and James Lindsay and, you know, so many others that are standing for this. And I thank you for that and really applaud you for that. And so, so if other people are listening to this and they've had similar instances, where can people find you and add to your volume of calls and hopefully clients as well?
Yeah, you could just Google my name. I'm on social media at PIV4Law, P-I-V, the number 4, L-A-W, Twitter, Instagram, look me up. My website, PIV4Law.com, very easy. Just look up PIV4Law and I'm there.
Awesome.
And if you have one of these cases, yeah, give me a call. Give my office a call. We are anticipating and we are looking forward to hearing from all of you.
Excellent. Well, I'll look forward to an update and, of course, reading American Express's response when you get that. That should be interesting. But come back soon and give us an update. And David, really, thanks so much for your time. I've been looking forward to this interview for a while. So thank you.
Me too. Thank you, Jenna.
And I want to ask you now to donate to Food for the Poor, United in God's Work. Hurricane Fiona has pummeled the Caribbean with devastating winds, catastrophic flooding, and widespread power outages. Food for the Poor has been serving the poorest nations in that part of the world for more than 40 years, and they are responding again now. So during this time of crisis, hurricane relief kits containing food, water, hygiene kits, medical supplies, and other critically needed items are already being distributed throughout Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, and Haiti. You can support this effort by giving your best gift now. Please just text Jenna to 91999, and we have this up on the screen for you for those who are watching on Rumble and YouTube, and we'll send you a link to give. So text Jenna, J-E-N-N-A, to 91999. Families have lost everything and need our help. Anything you can do will help Food for the Poor to bring aid to these families. Just text Jenna to 91999 and we'll send a link so that you can give. This is one of the largest faith-based international relief agencies in the United States, and Food for the Poor is able to respond quickly and efficiently to disasters like this. But they can't do it without your generous support, so thank you in advance for giving what you can now.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.